Welcome to Federal Insights for May, sponsored by KPMG.
Machine learning and artificial intelligence might make computers smarter, but the real objective is to make people more productive. At the Advanced Research Projects Agency Energy, or ARPA-E, an artificial intelligence program aims to help engineers come up with new and useful ideas for the next generation of energy technology. For how it works, ARPA-E's program director, Dr. David Tu.
The tool is ultimately aimed at engineers, and the goal is to try and give them the tools that they need to develop ideas that will help us to solve our energy problems more efficiently with lower cost. At the same time, we want to help them develop these ideas. We also want to help them evaluate these ideas in a more efficient way.
So give us an example.
For instance, we have a power generation example, let's say, where you have natural gas and you have air, and you'd like to convert that to electric power, and you have all these technologies on a bench. The question is, well, what technologies do you use and how do you interconnect them? So we want to develop the tools to help engineers pull together these different technology options and then develop a system concept. Then once they have that back of the envelope concept, we want to help them do the detailed design of each of the components in greater depth with less cost and hopefully yield a product at the end of the day that's better performing.
Because engineers have long had tools like computer-aided design. There's a lot of vendors of CAD tools and so forth that let them model different mechanical systems.
That's right.
This takes it beyond that?
Well, we hope to actually leverage a lot of those tools that exist and really kind of automate the intuition that engineers bring to the table. I mean, engineers have these wonderful CAD tools which have all these different options, and it's up to the engineer to figure out how to leverage all these tools that he has to yield a system that gives him the performance that he needs.
So when you mentioned, say, that to continue with that example of gas and air have to be mixed in a certain way and then burned to produce energy in some system,
right?
What types of data have to be fed into an algorithm to help enhance the outcome of knowledge of, this idea would really work?
Data is a significant challenge. But fortunately, at the same time, in addition to data, we have the basic laws of physics, the conservation of mass, the conservation of energy, that we can use, in effect, to create artificial data that we can use to derive some of these tools.
So in other words, if I design a pipette that wouldn't let enough air in, the algorithm would know, well, that's not big enough to do what you say, and you need a bigger pipe or something. You can tell I'm not an engineer here.
That would be the hope. But the challenge is, we need these tools, and we need lots of data and physics-based models to train them. And there's a cost associated with doing that. So the real, I think, goal of the research effort is to figure out, is it worth paying this cost to develop these tools that would make engineers more efficient at the end of the day?
So what is happening in ARPA-E right now to enable this algorithm to be learning? I mean, what is it you're doing right now to produce this, I guess, eventually a product?
We have, I would say, a lot of our ongoing projects have machine learning and artificial intelligence elements. At the same time, we've just launched a new program called Differentiate that's actually focused on the development of these tools.
Okay, and Differentiate, I guess, is really an acronym. Tell us what the sentence is behind it.
This is going to be a test. Design intelligence fostering formidable energy reduction and enabling totally impactful advanced technology enhancements.
Okay, so where are you? What's the status of the program at this point?
Well, we had a solicitation actually that just coincidentally closed yesterday. So we have a whole bunch of concept papers from people that we're in the process of reviewing. We'll make down selections over the next month or so and encourage people or discourage people to submit full proposals. We hope to have the full effort up and running by next February.
So this is a grant program?
It is effectively a grant program. It's a cooperative agreement.
And will these programs, these test beds of developing this algorithm, will this be purely an academic exercise, or could some of the energy companies be participating in working with their own engineering departments?
Actually, it's all of the above. We expect universities, we expect national labs, and we expect large companies as well. And we hope the ultimate products will be open source software, commercial software, as well as proprietary software and algorithms that large companies might use to design their products.
We're speaking with Dr. David Tu. He's program director at the Advanced Research Projects Agency, Energy. And give us the wider aperture view of artificial intelligence in the energy field.
Well, it can certainly be used for a wide range of things. Design tools is just one aspect of it. People are using it to try and develop better control systems, to try and help develop better maintenance procedures, for example, maintenance systems. I'd say the opportunities are endless.
And you mentioned gas, and that's an important part of the energy economy. What about nuclear? I mean, is there, that's an area where I guess there's a national debate going on whether we develop further nuclear energy. Right now, there's not a lot of applications, but it seems like that's an area where you have these very complicated systems where AI could really help that whole thing.
It is. I would say any energy technology is potentially an application for this technology. Nuclear is one. We want to help engineers design more efficient nuclear power plants at lower cost. We want to help engineers design more efficient, lower cost wind turbines, solar cells, energy storage systems, natural gas power plants, you name it, anything.
Because you, in your background, worked at Pratt & Whitney, which produces turbines.
That's right.
And what did you learn there? What was the, how did that inform what you're doing now?
It actually helped a lot in terms of understanding how large companies design real products that we all use. And understanding the design process that they use actually provided some sense of framework that we could use to develop the Differentiate program and target different problem areas.
And you might say the engine in a car, for example, is an energy producer. In a sense, it produces rotational energy as opposed to heat and light.
That's right.
But do you feel that this type of application, this of AI, could help in that field also?
Theoretically, it could. I think in the program, we're going to pick a few focus areas, and internal combustion engines may or may not be one
of
them.
Sure.
But certainly, there are endless applications for this approach.
And how, I mean, in your experience, how receptive to these new techniques and approaches is the energy industry? Because sometimes it tends to be a little bit on the, I don't know, conservative side with respect to how it operates.
I would say the engineers on the whole are very excited. There's been a lot of, I would say, one-off examples of people pursuing these techniques for their own specific problems. And I would say the response to the solicitation has been very positive.
And what about batteries? Is that something you're looking at too? Because the battery question seems to be a limiting factor in so many possible applications of electric power where you're not plugged in.
Yeah, I'd say part of what we want to do is try and develop new material combinations, and batteries are one potential application for new materials. And actually, there are tremendous opportunities for more energy-dense, lower-cost, longer-life batteries. And indeed, we do expect to pursue batteries through the Differentiate program.
And where do people obtain the algorithms that need to be trained?
We're in part trying to leverage as much as possible algorithms that are out there today that people have developed for other things, looking at cat pictures on the web, natural language processing. We expect that some of those algorithms are going to have to be modified for our application, but the goal is to try and leverage as much that's out there for other purposes as we can.
A lot of those are open source then, correct?
That's correct. That's right.
So you don't have to go to a software vendor necessarily to buy their whole package. You could find something on GitHub and use that algorithm and adapt it to this energy application.
Exactly. Exactly.
All right, so the program, you'll be making the decisions and the people will be underway in February. What will happen then?
We'll probably have, I would say, let's throw out a number between 10 and 20 projects running in parallel, trying to develop algorithms for their own specific problem area. And hopefully they'll be producing over the next 2 years after February software that others can use to design their own energy systems.
So the intellectual property that this program produces will be available across the board?
It will depend on the individual project, and it's up to them on how they want to commercially realize their technology via open source, via commercial software, or via proprietary software that they maintain themselves. Our goal is energy impact, and there are different ways to impact the energy space.
That's Dr. David Tu, ARPA-E's program director. Coming up after a short break, Denise Kitts, Director of the Veterans Experience Office Multi-Channel Technology Directorate at the Veterans Affairs Department. I'm Tom Temin.
From large backlogs and mountains of data to unfunded mandates and spikes in demand, federal agencies face obstacles to efficiently completing business and mission tasks. Intelligent automation can help ease some of the pressure. At KPMG, they help agencies access the full spectrum of intelligent automation so they can deliver greater innovation across their organizations while having a more positive impact on their mission, workforce, and constituents. To learn more, please visit kpmg.com/us/govautomation.
Welcome back to the show. For this segment, I spoke with Denise Kitts, Director of the Veterans Experience Office Multi-Channel Technology Directorate at the Veterans Affairs Department. Why don't we start with what the office actually does?
So the office is really about improving the veterans experience. And So essentially what we try to do is focus VA on the veteran's experience. You know, many times in government industry or even in the private sector, when people are building services and products, they don't really focus on their end user and really understanding what that end user needs. So at the Veterans Experience Office, what we try to do is focus in on the veteran's experience and help VA design and build services that truly meet their needs. And so there's a lot of different tools and technologies and processes that we've either co-developed with veterans or with employees, but they're all focused in on improving that customer experience, improving the services that we deliver.
And what does the multi-channel aspect of it mean?
So there's a number of services at VA that we provide either kind of in the digital space, over the web or via contact center. And so with multi-channel, really what that means is trying to create that consistent experience. So one of our mottos is, meeting the veteran or the family member, the caregiver, survivor, when and where they want. And so we want them to have a consistent experience regardless of the modality that they're using, whether they're calling into an agent or they're doing something online. We want to make sure that experience is efficient, it's effective, it's consistent. At some point, we'd really like to get to more of an omni-channel experience where we know that maybe you started on the web and you couldn't really get the thing you needed and then you end up calling an agent. That agent would be aware of all the things that you tried to do on the website via self-service.
Sure, and I imagine vice versa, too. If you started out in person and you wanted to follow up somewhere, you could go online and there would be a record of what happened in person earlier.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. So, just having those interactions, again, whether you've, started on the web or you've walked into a clinic or you've called an agent, having all these interactions captured and shared across the entire department, because the goal is really having a more proactive, personalized experience. So I think we feel that if we're doing that coordination across the channels and everybody's looking at that same data about the customer, we could do a whole lot better around delivering that personalized experience.
And just to set the scene, give us a couple of examples of applications you might be working on.
Sure. So one of the big things we've done over the last year was a consolidation of websites. So VA historically has grown up with these very program-specific websites. So we had at one point over 500 different ways a veteran could go online and try to find information for the services that they needed. So one of the things we've done over the last year was a big consolidation of the websites, and we deployed human-centered design and worked with our veterans to try to figure out what they wanted. And what was really interesting was even though we had all these websites, veterans really, really thought what they expected to do was to go to our main website, which is va.gov, and be able to access all the services they need from va.gov, which is kind of interesting because to date, prior to that, va.gov had been more of a inward-facing sort of website where, had a lot of program information on it. You couldn't do a lot of things related to self-service. So we've spent the last year retooling VA.gov. We relaunched it last November, and we've been using, human-centered design to redesign a lot of the services that veterans can access via VA.gov. So that's one of the things that's one of the main things we're doing in terms of kind of multi-channel. The other thing was a big effort related to consolidation of the data. We mentioned earlier that regardless of the modality that you come in, whether you walk in or you use a website or you call a contact center agent, we want all those modalities to be looking at the same data. So we had a big effort over the last year to take customer information that lived in over 80 different systems in VA and consolidate that and create kind of a single profile for our customer. So regardless of where you're at in whatever contact center you're at in the department, you're looking at the same data as somebody else in a different contact center, and you're looking at the same data that the veteran's looking at when they're coming in on VA.gov.
Sure. We're speaking with Denise Kitt. She's director of VA's Veterans Experience Office Multi-Channel Technology Directorate. And let's talk about artificial intelligence then and how it comes into play as you bring all of this data, all of this VA, or I should say veteran-centered design, into play. What is AI doing to help out, and how do you deploy it?
Sure. So, like probably most companies, there's a whole lot of talk about AI and not a lot of real stuff happening yet. But in the VA space, we've been looking at several use cases for AI because we think, especially in the digital space, the digital space and the contact center space. It's a great area to start with AI. So one of the things we're looking at is, if you think about like chatbots or virtual assistants, and most folks have interacted with these things, and you know, customers are expecting this sort of engagement when they come in via self-service or contact centers in today's environment. So we've been looking at like virtual assistants, which are used to help answer questions up front to kind of get you to the right agent or to get you to the right information. So we've been looking at chatbots and virtual assistants to kind of augment our contact centers. So one example of that would be we have the White House VA hotline. And what the agents do there is, you know, they listen to veterans and they try to understand their concerns. And then based on what they're hearing, they try to triage and route those concerns to the appropriate employees downstream for resolution. So one of the things we're looking at AI to do is help with that triaging, you know, to help do more pattern recognition and get the veteran, or help the employee route the information to the right place right out of the gate versus, you know, might potentially being routed to the wrong location, being bounced around the system a little bit. We're also looking at AI and the use of natural language processing and to change the experience veterans have when they go to the website and they click on Contact VA. If you do that today, you know, you're going to get a drop-down box with lots of different opportunities to select the wrong thing in terms of trying to, you know, find the information you want or to get the right help.
Sure.
So we think natural language processing would be a great augmentation to help veterans, you know, contact us and either do it self-service and get, you know, the answer to the question that they're trying to understand, or to to route them to the appropriate place to get assistance.
And those aren't plug and play applications, are they? I mean, I was online with a chat with a retailer the other day, and I had the sense that this company did not have the resources to really do great information technology. And I could tell within two exchanges with the bot agent with the online chat that it was just a commodity piece of technology that had no idea what I was really looking for. And so I imagine you've got to put a lot of care into how those are engineered so that it is really a VA agent and not just a commodity agent that tries to search VA.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, there's lots of different platforms out there that offer, you know, AI-type tactics. So, you know, one thing is, you know, getting it right, you know, picking the right technology for the right use case, and they're not all the same. So you really need to understand what problem you're trying to solve when you're looking at the different technologies. But one of the key things you said is, you know, what we've learned through our research with our veteran community is that they're really looking for, in most cases, they're looking for a high-touch interaction. So when you're going to introduce a technology or some AI technologies into a space interacting with veterans, it's really important that we balance it well. You know, we think AI can definitely help veterans, make it easier for them to do self-service. We think it can definitely help our agents with taking some of the more mundane tasking off of their plate and allow them to kind of focus on building the relationship with the caller. But again, to your point, you know, you really need to make sure you pick the right technologies, you've trained them the right way, and it really is augmenting the experience and not making it, you know, more of a robotic or, you know, something that's not actually helping with the experience.
Sure. And I imagine too that to make sure you have success with the intended user, is it better to let them know that you're dealing with a bot, but I'm one that has been trained to answer your specific question, so go ahead and try, so that at least you're not trying to kid them into thinking it's a person on the other end of that chat?
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's going to be really interesting when we do our pilots. You know, again, we're going to use a lot of the human-centered design techniques and incorporate that feedback, as you know, we believe strongly on, you know, an agile methodology and iterating as we go and including our end users. So this will definitely, as we do these pilots, you know, we're going to be including not only our frontline employees that are in the contact center, you know, but with our veterans. And, you know, we'll iterate and we'll see what resonates with them and design something that makes sense to our customers.
Denise Kitt, Director of the Veterans Experience Office, Multi-Channel Technology Directorate at the Veterans Affairs Department. More to come after this short break. I'm Tom Temin.
From large backlogs and mountains of data to unfunded mandates and spikes in demand, federal agencies face obstacles to efficiently completing business and mission tasks. Intelligent automation can help ease some of the pressure. At KPMG, they help agencies access the full spectrum of intelligent automation so they can deliver greater innovation across their organizations while having a more positive impact on their mission, workforce, and constituents. To learn more, please visit kpmg.com/us/gov automation.
Welcome back to our interview with Denise Kitts, Director of the Veterans Experience Office Multi-Channel Technology Directorate at the Veterans Affairs Department. And what about VA's own workforce, the technology workforce or the others, say the clinicians and all the other people that might either directly or indirectly deal with veterans? How does AI change what they do and how they approach their work?
I think AI is, while it's like a next generation in terms of tech, I think it's not about people versus machines. It's about people working with machines. And we've been doing, this isn't new. You know, AI will change some jobs, but this isn't new. The workforce has been going through this type of change since technology got introduced back in the 1960s. I think the only difference today is that speed of the innovation with AI. So, you know, I think it's very similar to the lean operations that many organizations went through back in the 1990s and 2000s when companies were heavily invested in leaning out their operations to have a competitive advantage. You know, many people thought they'd lose their jobs when a Lean Six Sigma project kicked off. But what happened was government, you know, streamlined the operations and really allowed employees to focus on more complex value-oriented activities. So I think AI is going to fall in that same sort of space where, you know, leadership's going to need to be conscientious of the impact and identify where change is going to be needed and, you know, retool and reskill the workforce, very much like we've done all along with any other technology that's been introduced, you know, into the workplace over the last 30 or 40 years. One example I can give you is around contact centers. So as with contact centers, as we introduce things like virtual assisted agent, where you've got the AI technology up front that's fielding some questions and answering some questions and to help triage and get them to the right information or the right agent, you're in that particular use case, you're taking a lot of the kind of mundane task away from the agent, and you're really allowing them to kind of free up and focus on things that are more complex or to develop that relationship. And, you know, what we're envisioning is that I think the contact center agents are going to be much more jazzed, so to speak, about being able to spend more time on the call developing those relations and dealing with the complex things versus, you know, working on more of the mundane tasks. So I really think I see AI as, you know, a technology that will help free up the workforce to work on things that they really want to work on that are strategic. And, you know, if nothing else, will actually help with employee engagement. You know, leadership has to understand where AI is going to be applied and how, and we just have to, like, you know, use those disciplines of change management to make sure we react to it appropriately.
Denise Kitts is Director of the Veterans Experience Office Multi-Channel Technology Directorate at the Veterans Affairs Department. Earlier, we heard from Dr. David Tu of the Advanced Research Projects Agency, Energy. To listen to this program again, go to federalnewsnetwork.com and search Federal Insights. I'm Tom Temin.
Thank you for listening to Federal Insights for May, sponsored by KPMG on Federal News Radio, part of the Federal News Network.